Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, February 26, 2020, and the time is 9:03 a.m. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room in the State Capitol. Please silence your cell phones. This is Co-Chair Natasha Von Imhoff, and I'm joined today by Senator Wilikowski and Senator Wilson. Everyone else will be coming here shortly. I have Senator Begich here, Senator Bishop just walked in, and I have Senator Stevens joining us as well. We have a quorum to do business. Today's agenda is Senate Bill 6, and I'm going to read the entire title of the act. An act relating to early education programs provided by school districts related to school age eligibility, relating to funding for early education programs, establishing early education programs and a voluntary parent program, relating to the duties of the Department of Education and Early Development, relating to certification of teachers, establishing a reading intervention program for public school students enrolled in grades kindergarten through three, establishing a reading program in the Department of Education and Early Development, establishing a teacher retention working group, and providing for an effective date. This is our first hearing on the bill, and I'd like to invite Senator Tom Begich and his staff, Luki Towin, to present the bill. Please identify yourselves for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Begich. I'm the state senator for District J in downtown Anchorage. And I am here to present the sponsor substitute for SB 6, the committee substitute for the sponsor substitute for SB 6.
Hello, my name is Luki Gail Tobin. The special character in my first name is Alt-0246, and I'm Office of Senator Tom Begich.
Madam Chair, if I may, the title of the bill gets right to the point. If you can read that title, that means you have the ability to read. The complexity of it kind of underscores the complexity of this bill. What I'd like to do is start with a very brief description of how the bill came to be, then read from the sponsor statement as well as some additional comments related to that, then turn over the presentation to my staff assistant to walk through the sectional. I will warn you in advance, the sectional is quite long and quite detailed, but I wanted to be sure that you had full information here in the committee and that you fully understand the bill that is before you. And so let me start by just talking about the process. Some 3.5 years ago, I introduced a bill, SB 99, which was directly related to pre-K. I spent a considerable amount of time over the next 2.5 years working with early education specialists, the Department of Education, specialists from around the country who worked on early education and reading issues, as well as a number of superintendents, school board members, educators, and others here in the state of Alaska to try to develop the best possible pre-kindergarten bill. Through that process, I discovered over and over again, the research showed that while you could have a good pre-K, if you didn't have strong reading to support the pre-K, you could lose the gains of the pre-kindergarten by third or fourth or fifth grade. It also underscored that you could have a strong reading program in the state or any state, but without strong pre-kindergarten, those programs generally didn't produce the results that you might want. So those factors were all sort of floating around as we entered into last year in the reintroduction of that legislation as SB 6, which was, again, a universal voluntary evidence-based pre-kindergarten bill. In October of this year, the Commissioner of Education approached me on behalf of the governor, and we began to discuss what a good education bill that would actually meet the needs of Alaska's citizens ought to look like. And we talked about it in concept. In meetings with the commissioner and the governor, we laid out principles, and we determined that there were certain principles of universal voluntary pre-K, using strong evidence, cultural basis, as well as looking at local control and ensuring that it was always a voluntary pre-kindergarten program, but that it had the strongest possible evidence behind its success. Secondarily, we looked at what kind of reading works best, looking at examples from around the country, everywhere from California to Florida to Colorado to Mississippi, North Carolina, and others. We looked at what was working and what wasn't working. We also looked at efforts that had been going on within the department to do intensive intervention with largely failing schools to see if perhaps there was something we could learn from that and ways that we could use some of the resources that were being produced for the department at the federal level that could be used for some of that intensive intervention. From that, we built the concept that led to the introduction of sponsor substitute for SB 6. Now, that bill was intended to be nothing but a template to start the process and the conversation. Prior to its introduction, however, we did meet with the Superintendents Association's Early Childhood Group. We met with early learning groups. We got as much input as we could to help inform the bill. We met with educators, and we met with a number of superintendents and school board members. In the process of developing that initial template, we took it before the Senate Education Committee, and Senator Stevens, as you know, the chair of that committee is here today, and I assume he or his staff would be available to talk about that process. But I want you to know what that process was. We went through, beginning a month ago in this very room, we went through 8 substantive hearings on the bill, where we continued to craft and improve the bill. Since that time, myself, my staff, the Commissioner of Education, and others working in tandem have gone through and developed the current bill that is before you, the CS, which includes 34 substantive changes from the original introduced bill, informing and enhancing the pre-K and the reading components of the bill. Why? Because we wanted to make it stronger. We spoke to, again, literally on the conference calls and others, hundreds of educators, school board members, superintendents, the vast majority of those superintendents, I might add, to get their input into this process. We've heard their testimony. And so what you have before you is the next stage of that bill, including its comprehensive fiscal notes. So with that, I'll just go into a very brief commentary from the sponsor statement and then turn it over to Ms. Tobin to read for you the section. Early education is imperative to our state. When examining Alaska's long-term economy, which this committee is charged to do, it's important to consider how productive our citizens are and to ensure that we reduce the potential drains that result with our population from the unrealized potential of our citizens. Early education and the ability to read is an important part of that equation. The markers for success develop early in life, and brain science underscores that how we use our brains at those crucial early years before we enter kindergarten, as well as how prepared we are when we enter the K-12 education system, have a dramatic impact on how well we'll do in school and in life. Research shows us that those who live in poverty have an incredibly difficult time catching up with others if they come to school ill-prepared. That same research shows that those who have a high-quality preschool experience go on to further academic success and personal success. The studies such as the Perry Preschool Project, which now is in its third generation of research, shows that those who go through quality pre-K return an investment of $7 on the dollars invested, on a dollar invested in that pre-K. They have long-term results that show that their engagement in the criminal justice system, engagement in social support networks, and improvement in their own ability to earn income are all markers that are improved. Here in Alaska, we have been working with pre-kindergarten programs for over a decade. We have evidence here in Alaska, whether it's in Mat-Su or Anchorage, or whether it's in the Lower Kuskokwim School District or Nome, that the department shows that where we have cohorts that went through preschool that's evidence-based and high quality, and those who don't, the successes by third and now in terms of eighth grade are dramatic in terms of the outcomes that we're seeing in kids. The problem is we do not expand that pre-kindergarten at that level to all districts in the state, nor do we always support it with strong reading, though most districts do try to do that. Research, as I said earlier, that we looked at showed that if you didn't invest in high quality reading at the same time that you were investing in pre-K, you were making a mistake. You're not reinforcing the process. So this bill provides a template for good quality reading programs that can be used by any district. But what it doesn't do is take away local control. It provides the local school districts will still be able under this legislation to use screening instruments that are high quality screening instruments, if that's what they're using now. It doesn't take them away. It doesn't replace their texts. It supplements them. It goes back to the Moore lawsuit as well, which you have heard me talk about ad nauseum on the floor and elsewhere. In the Moore lawsuit, one of the key findings by Judge Gleason was that the support provided by the Department of Education was insufficient to help our school districts teach our children to learn. In particular, that lawsuit focused on the low-performing school districts. What this bill also does is provide that additional support at the departmental level. It identifies a number of reading specialists that will then be made available within each and every district. It provides opportunities for those districts to send and have their individuals trained to become reading experts. It provides opportunities for districts to take advantage of training and other supplemental support from the department in ways that we haven't done in almost two decades. These are the changes that we need to dramatically change our education system if we are going to succeed. With that, I just want to say smart investment, as we discussed yesterday in our oil and gas royalties, also leads us to the importance of how we invest in the real, if you will, the real resource we have in Alaska, which, as we often say, is our children. How we invest matters. The return we get on that investment matters. The success of our children matter. This bill, I believe, will transform the way we educate children in the state in a way that will only add to our economic and our state's overall success. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn this over to Ms. Tobin to go through a sectional or answer any questions if you have any before I do that.
Are there any questions from committee members for the bill sponsor? Thank you, Senator Baggage. Ms. Tobin, whenever you're ready.
Once again, for the record, my name is Lukey Gail Tobin, legislative staff for the Office of Senator Tom Baggage. I'll be walking you through the sectional analysis for the committee substitute of the sponsor substitute of Senate Bill 6. So Section 1 simply establishes this act as the Alaska Reads Act. Section 2 amends existing statute to incorporate an early education program that has been approved by the Department of Education and Early Development, or DEED, as I'll refer to it thus far, into an existing elementary school. This will also include a Head Start program. Section 3 amends existing state statute to include reading intervention services in addition to other intervention services for early literacy. The reading intervention services are going to be detailed in a later section. That will be Section 18. Section 4 directs DEED to include information and data collected under new Alaska statutes that are created in this act that pertain to the Parent as Teachers and the Alaska Reads Act in their annual report to the legislature on February 15th. Section 5 changes the date a student is eligible to enter kindergarten from September 1st to June 1st to ensure every student entering kindergarten is at least 5 years old. This is because in Section 6, there is a new subsection that's added to that Alaska statute that's pertaining to kindergarten age eligibility that establishes the date a child is eligible to enter a public early education program, also called pre-K, ensuring that 4 and 5 year olds may voluntarily access pre-K programs. Section 7 adds a new subsection to Alaska Statute 14.03.120 and establishes an annual reporting requirement for school districts regarding student performance metrics in grades K through 3. This includes data related to class size and the number of teachers in each of those classrooms, the number and percentage of students in K through 3 who improve their grade level skill reading, and the number of and percentage of students who are retained from advancing in grades K through 3. This data is currently not recorded and reported to the department. Section 8 creates a new state statute that codifies a statewide pre-K program. This is known as the Early Education Grant Program. This provides a stair-step 3-year grant program to provide training and assistance to school districts in developing their local pre-K program. Over 6 fiscal years, all school districts will have an opportunity to participate. Section 8 also codifies the Parent as Teachers program as a program of DEED. This section specifies particular criteria for parents as teachers and demonstrates its efficacy in supporting school districts in pre-K education. Section 9 directs DEED to supervise all early education programs and also approve those programs that are established under that preceding section, Section 8. Section 9 also directs DEED to establish a new reading program to provide direct support and reading interventions to schools that choose to participate. Section 10 simply defines an early education program as a program for 3 to 5 year olds if the program's primary function is educational. This holds harmless Head Start, as three-year-olds are not eligible for pre-K. This also ensures that three-year-olds are not excluded from existing state and federal funding programs. Section 11 allows DEE to supply supplemental reading textbooks and materials related to intervention services established under Section 18 of this bill. Section 12 amends existing state statute that relates to the duties of the State Board of Education and Early Development. This section adds to those duties a requirement to establish regulations for pre-K standards and pre-K teacher certification requirements. Section 13 as a new subsection to Alaska Statute 1417.500 that allows an early education student to be counted in the school district's average daily membership, or ADM. And this is, the student will be counted as a half-day student. This happens only after an early education program has been approved by DEE. So Section 14, this section establishes and amends the definition of an elementary school to include students in early education programs provided by DEE. Section 15 simply prohibits the double dipping of federal and state funding sources. It adds a new subsection to avoid letting school districts count pre-K students twice, once for their formula foundation funding and again for any other state or federal program funding. Section 16 ensures teaching certificate reciprocity. For teachers moving to Alaska from out of state, this section adds a provision that such teachers must complete at least 3 credits of coursework or equivalency in training or testing in evidence-based reading instruction in order to be eligible for an Alaska teaching endorsement in elementary education. In the preceding section, Section 17, a new subsection is added to Alaska Statute 14.20.020 that requires all current Alaska teachers to complete at least 3 credits of coursework or equivalency in training or testing in evidence-based reading instruction in order to be eligible for an endorsement in elementary education. Please note that a teacher may apply the requirement under this section to meet their continuing education requirements to maintain their teacher certification. So Section 18 establishes Article 15 Reading Intervention Programs. This section directs DEE to establish a statewide reading assessment and screening tool to identify students who are struggling with reading. It also directs DEE to assist teachers in monitoring student progress in reading proficiency and provide training to teachers in reading intervention tools. Section 18 also establishes AS 14.30.765, which directs each school district to offer intensive reading services to K-3 students who are struggling with reading. Those services must be implemented in a manner that includes a high amount of communication between teachers, parents, administrators, and most importantly, the student. In this section, there's considerable detailed attention, including written and verbal parental notification for instances when a student is failing to progress toward reading proficiency. In addition, this section also outlines very specific notification requirements for when a student is being considered a candidate for not advancing to the next grade level. Section 18 also establishes a DEE reading program to assist school districts in a variety of ways to affect the reading intervention services described in the statutes above. DEE shall employ and deploy reading specialists to districts, in addition to making supplemental tools and resources available to districts who are helping students who are struggling with reading. Finally, the section aligns the word district throughout the Act with definitions given elsewhere in existing state statute when referring to a school district.
So we're just going to pause real quickly, okay? This is a big sectional, so I just want to make sure that people have questions. I also want to acknowledge that Senator Olson is here and that Senator Giesel has joined us. Do we have questions right now from committee members? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Tobin and Senator Bigich, one of the big questions that has come out when this act first was put on the scene was the retention issue. Mm-hmm. How can you go ahead and allay those concerns that somebody's child is going to be held back for one reason or another, or what has changed since its initially was dropped into the legislature?
Thanks for that question, if I may, through the chair. Senator Olson, if you go to page 2 of the act, you'll see on line 19 and under section 3, right now that's current state policy, that grade retention standards and policies for the elementary school attendant are set by each school district. They're not set in this bill. This bill does nothing to change current retention standards that exist in state law. In fact, what it does do is ensure that there is now parameters around how we report retention. Right now, there is no requirement for any district to tell us how many people that they may have retained, how many students they may have retained. What this does is actually say that you will, in fact, have to report that to the State Department. Secondarily, what this bill does is it strengthens the relationship between the parent, the teacher, and the administration in a school district so that any decision that's made on retention should include all of those parties, which is not a requirement presently under state law. Third, most importantly, if you look at, I believe, let me just look through my notes here. If you look at page 17, line 6, on page 17, line 6, this is a new language. Explain that a student in grade 3 should demonstrate sufficient reading skills to progress to grade 4. The idea, and wherever it says should demonstrate these, and there's another line in here, I don't see it right off the top, I'll find it here in a bit, but there's no requirement in the bill that a student be mandatorily retained in this legislation. There's none. Finally, there are exceptions that are provided in Section G of this Section 18, and if you look, that begins on page 17 and moves over into page 18. None of these exceptions occur in existing law. They include everything from students with a disability whose individualized education plan exempts the student from participation in a statewide screening tool. It includes exceptions for dual language learners, whose primary language is other than English and who has had less than 2 years of instruction in English language, for those who may have been previously held back under a school district policy. So there are a number of protections that are put in place for students under this bill too. So while I've heard those arguments made by a number of folks, this bill does not do anything to add retention language to existing law. What it does do is define what we mean by that and ensure that the final decision as much as possible is a joint decision and an informed decision. Could it be stronger, the protection for parents in this bill? It could be.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And no further questions.
Thank you. I have a couple questions. So on Section 7, under reporting requirements, is it possible, are you thinking about creating a whole new series of testing, or can we use MAP that we have in existence already that I think teachers administer on a periodic basis?
I would defer to the commissioner on that question, but it's my understanding that existing programs like MAP, which I think 95% of school districts are using right now, I think that's the number I heard in testimony, would be acceptable under this program.
Okay, so I will save that question then also for the commissioner. And I think just on a follow-up is, who's going to receive that data? What are they going to do with that data?
Madam Chair, if I may respond to that, again, for the record, Tom Begich, Senator from District J. I should be doing that each time, I think. But the data would be received annually by the department under this legislation, as well as the education committees of the House and the Senate. It would be reported on a regular basis. Also, there's a provision in the bill that would create a review group of parents, instructors, principals, that would also review data produced from the report on a regular basis, and they would report on the efficacy of the act. So that's actually provided for and was an addition made in the Education Committee.
Thank you, Senator Begich. I have one other question is, we talked about, I forgot I even wrote down the section, about continuing education, that basically for having a teacher have a certification of early reading there. Is that something that the teacher will have to pay for him or herself, or is that going to be provided by the district, or how does that work?
Well, currently it would be the same as it exists now. Every teacher is required within a 5-year period to recertify to, it's either a 5 or a 10-year period, but to 5-year period to recertify and to get certain credit hours to do that. This simply says if you're going to get your teaching certificate in early education, that at least three of those equivalent hours would be hours that would be hours of reading, intensive reading. So it wouldn't change the way it works now. I don't know how districts' policies work, whether they do or don't pay for the continuing education, but it wouldn't change the current policy, except to add the reading specificity.
Thank you, Senator Begich. And I also want to note for the record that Senator Hoffman and Senator Stebbins have joined us, and I hope you're healthy. Okay, we have Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Madam Chairwoman. My constituent is Posey Boggs.
Yes.
And she has been very involved in this and has really done a tremendous job. Thank you for working with her. She talked to her at a town hall meeting this weekend, and she had a couple suggestions or a couple ideas, and you and I talked about them, and I just wanted to get those on the record if I could. The one was on Section 18, and under the current provision, it says the department shall adopt a statewide screening or assessment tool to administer this to students in grade kindergarten through three. And one suggestion was to move that back to preschool. And your thoughts on that?
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. Originally, when we were talking about the bill, and this comes out of the reading task force as well, that a number of the Senate and House members participated in. Initially, we had talked about doing a screening at the pre-K level to look for learning disabilities. There's federal law that requires the use of child find, essentially, to do some of that screening. Now, I know the commissioner is going to speak on that later in his testimony, but there were two reasons why I believe that wasn't included in the bill. The first reason was one that I recognize, which is that not everybody has pre-kindergarten, and so we all have kindergarten, and so that seemed to be an appropriate place. But the second was also in terms of the screening itself, whether it would be age appropriate. And so whether or not you can, I am unfamiliar with the screening tools that might be available for pre-K youth, and under this bill that could be somebody who's 4 or 5 years old. So am I averse to that idea? No, I'm not averse to it, but I'd let the commissioner speak to it from a more professional perspective, if that's okay.
Another question on section 1437-70, page 20. It requires the department to establish a reading program for the lowest performing 10% of schools, and the suggestion was to increase that to 40 or 50%.
Thank you for that question. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, that issue also came up in Senate Education Committee, and I should have earlier, Madam President, I should have thanked the work of Tim Lampkin and Senator Stevens, Tim's staff, on the bill, and I was remiss in doing that. One of the things that was pointed out on the last day of hearings was that the pool at 10% of potential schools, which is what the bill reads now, might be too small, actually, for the up to 10 schools that would be served by that intensive effort. So I've spoken to the commissioner about this as well as the governor. The idea that we would expand that, or potentially that pool could be expanded, is something we would be very open to. I would suggest probably open to the bottom 25% of performing schools. I did read a note from Ms. Boggs earlier this morning, and my one concern that I have with the suggestion about going to groups that are more aptly performing is that we may end up seeing all the money go to those who need it less than those who would, in fact, need it more. And so that is a concern of mine, but I do believe the pool needs to be larger. That was also a suggestion made by a former member of the Board of Education in testimony as well.
Just a quick comment on that, Senator Wilikowski. Any increases in the number of schools will change the fiscal note. And as you know, we have a finite amount of resources, and there's many competing needs around the state, not to mention school bond debt reimbursement, among other things. This body, this committee, as well as this body, will need to prioritize what is it that is most important to us and fund those things. We have not, we're just now starting our subcommittee process. We have oil at $53 a barrel. I'm not suggesting that this is not an important need, but it will need to compete with other important needs. Senator Wilikowski.
All right, thank you. And then lastly, Senator Begich, was sort of the overarching requirement that we improve the way we educate teachers in how they teach reading. Any thoughts on including that in this bill?
Through the chair, Senator Bilikowski, the bill does include a number of provisions for how we educate teachers and teach teachers about reading. In particular, there's a series of departmental responsibilities that are identified in the bill. The department takes responsibility, and the commission will speak to this later, for ensuring that every district has the opportunity, that they will pay for the transportation of teachers to come and be trained at what I think the suggestion was regional conferences, where they will actually get hands-on support to become better qualified teachers. Specificity was spoken to in a number of sections about what is entailed in reading comprehension and the additional credits that a teacher would require. So those are all spoken to the bill. We actually worked with teacher organizations when we came up with some of the provisions for that section as well to make sure that it met the needs that actual teachers on the ground were talking about. I've had a couple of meetings with early education teachers, conference calls with them. But I also wanted to take a moment to address the Madam Chair's comment about the expanding the pool. Expanding the pool would not increase under this bill. The number the bill provides for intensive support for up to 10 schools. That will not change. So the cost wouldn't change. Just the pool of schools that would be eligible to apply for that grant would be larger to ensure that there would be opportunity. So there would be there shouldn't be a change in fiscal note just by expanding the number of schools, because we'd still limit the number that would be eligible to 10. 10 schools would be eligible for those grants. There's 505 schools, I believe, by the last count in the state. So we would essentially lift it from 50 to somewhere around 125, 150.
Thank you, Senator Begich. That is a clarification. You are referring to these schools to qualify for the particular grants, not necessarily the schools that will receive the grants.
Correct.
If we want to increase the schools that receive the grants, which isn't a good idea, it would cost more money, but I understand.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Bishop has a question.
Yes, it's just more of a, yes, I do have a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Begich, thanks for your work and everybody's work on bringing this bill forward, but one thing I wanted to ask, did teacher retention come up anywhere in the conversation over the last how many weeks and months on this bill? Because
Madam Chair, Senator Bishop, through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, it did. Numerous times it came up. It came up to such an extent that we added a provision. Again, what section is that?
It's in Section 22, where it establishes a teacher retention working group as new uncodified law of the state of Alaska.
And for the record, that was Lukey Tobin, my staff assistant. That, again, Tom Begich, for the record, that was added by Senator Costello in committee. It is the effort there is to develop a task force that would include a number of key individuals, teachers, principals, superintendents, et cetera, the Board of Education members, to actually do a thorough, as you would say, Senator Bishop, deep dive on the issue of teacher retention and to come up with strategies for both recruitment and retention. So absolutely a critical component of the bill and a very a piece that we do support.
Okay, thank you. And Madam Chair, I'd just like to say when the Department of Education comes up, I'd like to tag team off of your earlier question on data, so thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Just to address the teacher retention issue, I understand when we were talking to the people about homelessness and housing, that teacher rural housing is a challenge, the lack thereof, if you will. I believe that there's been several ideas in the past trying to find to build teacher housing in many areas that lack it. Again, another funding source. Again, another budget item. Lots of choices. So, Lukey, thank you very much. Ms. Tobin, thank you very much. I think you have a few more sections, and I apologize. I didn't quite realize that you were pretty much almost done. I had misread, and I thought there was an extra page. But please continue and finish up. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Lukey Gail Tobin, Office of Senator Tom Begich. Moving on, we're very close to being completed here. Section 19 directs early education program staff to be included in those organizations required to report evidence of child abuse, making them mandatory reporters. Section 20 will repeal the early education grant program that's established under Section 8 after 11 years, once all school districts have an opportunity to participate. Section 21 establishes a teacher retention working group as new uncodified law in the state of Alaska. That working group shall submit a report to the governor and to the Senate Secretary and Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives for distribution to all legislators on or before January 15th of 2021. Section 22 is applicability language. It is relating to teachers with endorsements in early elementary education issued on or after the effective date of this act. Section 23 is transition language, and it directs the department to use 2018-19 school accountability ratings for purposes of determining the first cohort of the lowest performing schools to be eligible for those early education grants. And Section 23 establishes an effective date of July 1st, 2020.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just for the record of correction, that was Section 24, that last section.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yes, that's right, it is, isn't it? Okay. So I have a quick question just in regards to Section 19. Education program staff to be included in those organizations required to report evidence of child abuse. In the event that a teacher does not report it for any reason at all, would that be considered a criminal offense?
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that question. It just places that organization under reporting requirement. I suspect it does, but I'd have to look at that statute to be sure. It was conforming language to the statute.
Thank you, Senator Begich. If you could just kind of look into that and just let us know what the consequences are of not reporting.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other, Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Hoffman?
Madam Chair, that's probably a good question when education comes up to make sure that they're trained. I haven't read the whole section, but that's a good point you bring up.
Thank you. Training. Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding Section 23, using the information from 2018 and 19, the school accountability ranking, do you know if that has been completed yet, or is that something that needs to be completed? And if it needs to be completed, when do you anticipate that ranking to be available for the committee?
Madam Chair, through the chair to Senator Hoffman, I believe that ranking is already completed, and I'll let the commissioner speak specifically to it, but I believe it's already been completed.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions by committee members? So, thank you very, very much. At this time, I'd like to invite the Department of Education and Early Development Commissioner, Mr. Michael Johnson, to the table. So, Commissioner Johnson, when you're ready, please identify yourself for the record and tell us the department's perspective on Senate Bill 6.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Michael Johnson, and I am the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Thanks for the opportunity to be here, and I'll just start with a word of thanks to Senator Begich, the Governor, Senator Stevens, and the Senate Education Committee, the staff back here, and all the folks that have contributed to the both development and improvement of this bill since it was introduced in the legislature. The Alaska Reads Act represents actually years of work in both the legislature and outside the legislature. For example, several years ago, the State Board of Education started a strategic planning process, and through that, one of their five priorities was identified for every student in third grade to be reading proficiently. So this is a thoughtful priority. It's a bill that represents a lot of thoughtful dialogue and input over a number of years, that we know that if we can get more students reading by the end of third grade, that it will improve all our outcomes in school and even beyond school. The bill's a comprehensive approach. As the Senator noted, the bill has three main parts that everything else fits in, the pre-K part, and we know that that's really important for getting students to read by the end of third grade. And we know that protecting and enhancing that investment are K through three reading intervention strategies for students that may be struggling to be on target to read by the end of third grade. And then the third part is Lessons we've learned over the years in Alaska, we have a number of schools that have been low performing for a number of years, and the bill provides us the resources and the capacity at the department to go and support those schools to turn those outcomes around. The bill provides the structure and support needed to support everyone at the table that's trying to make decisions in support of students. If the bill passes, the work will just be done, because if a great bill passes the legislature, I want to make sure that we implement that bill in the best way possible. So we're already having conversations that if the bill passes, the things that we need to do to make sure that we improve the bill. And then finally, I'll just say, before I answer some of the questions that were brought up, that this bill gives everybody at the table a voice, students, parents, teachers, administrators, and it provides the structure needed to elevate all those voices to make the best decision possible for students. For example, if you're a parent, this bill requires that you are part of the decision-making process for your child, especially when it comes to struggling readers, and that you receive the resources that you need to help your family support your child's learning to read. If you're a teacher, this bill allows a number of interventions, retention being one of them, that you can use to serve your students, and it documents your expertise in that process. If you're a principal, a superintendent, or a school board member, this bill provides you with a process to make sure that there is a consistent, thoughtful, and effective decision-making for all your students when it comes to their progress toward reading proficiency, no matter what classroom or school or community they are in across the state. If you are a legislator, this bill provides you with annual reports regarding the implementation and effectiveness of the Alaska Reads Act. And most importantly, if you are a student, this bill provides you with multiple pathways to demonstrate that you're proficient in reading, and it provides you with evidence-based interventions if you need them, and multiple safeguards whether you are promoted without the skills needed to read proficiently or if you're retained. So this bill provides an opportunity for everybody at the table to have the structure and support they need to make the best decisions for students. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Are there any questions by committee members?
Thank you, Commissioner, for that overview. If you could do one thing to improve this bill from where it is right now, what would you do?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I pass it. I go for it if I had the opportunity. And secondly, the conversation about increasing that pool of schools in which we can apply those resources and supports. And so right now it says 10%. The bill calls that we can intervene in up to 10 schools per year, so that's the resources we have. But by expanding that pool, so these are not mandatory interventions that we would go into a school. It's we go to school districts and we say, who is ready and willing and wants us to help them, and if we expand that pool to 25 or more, as Mrs. Boggs communicated, I think we have a greater chance of applying those effectively and reaching more schools over time.
Thank you for that comment. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the commissioner? Senator Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You discussed intervention. Several years ago, the district intervened in administering education for the UPIT school district. I wonder if you have the information or can get the information to this committee how that intervention improved education for the UPIT school district.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we can get you that information from the department. I think this bill envisions a different kind of intervention than what I understood happened back then. That was before my time as commissioner. This bill is more of a cooperative arrangement with the school district, but we can get that information and look at it.
And the second question, Madam Chair, was relating to the question that I asked the sponsor regarding section 23. Can you provide at least my office, if not the committee, with the rankings for 2018-19 schools accountability rankings, if the department has that?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we can provide that information. Those rankings are part of the Every Student Succeeds Act. So this year was our second year and going through that process to use assessment data to rank them, so we can provide your office and the committee chair with that information.
Thank you, Commissioner. If there's no further questions, at this point, I'd like to open up public testimony. We have a lot of folks signed up all over the state. We have Fairbanks, Cordova, Offnet. I have a timestamp of when people signed up. Several people signed up before 9 a.m., several people after 9 a.m., so I'm going to work and kind of jump around the state and get everybody who signed up before 9 a.m. first, and then we'll go from there. So we're going to start off with the Offnet, and I have, and I'm going to here open it up here, opening public testimony. I have my timer here. Everyone will have 2 minutes. Please state your name and then begin your testimony. You will hopefully hear my ringer on my timer when your 2 minutes are up, and I would ask at that point that you summarize your main point so we can get on with the next person. We're going to start with Diane, is it Shebe, with Mat-Su Education Association, followed by Sandy Ryan.
Hi, my name is Diane K. Scheibe, and I've been a high school English teacher since 1993, so I understand the importance of reading. I'm calling on behalf of my colleagues who are busy in the classroom. I love the spirit of SB6. Investing in pre-K is overdue, and I really applaud Senator Begich for his work on this issue. I would like to encourage this committee to ensure that a parent has the final say in any decision around retaining a student. Retention is a tool that exists now, but it is not a silver bullet and should be used judiciously with the input from educators, administrators, and most importantly, the parents. Educators and Alaskans want this bill to succeed, but our schools have been doing more with less for almost a decade. In Mat-Su, teachers have the highest class sizes in the state. What's going to happen if SB6 comes with no additional funding for local districts to successfully implement it? Will class sizes further balloon? At Mock and Tons Elementary, we already have kindergarten class sizes at 27 and 28, and that's just wrong. It's not a recipe for success. I hope those parents are in contact with their legislators. Florida has been touted as a model of success in Florida, where there is a constitutional amendment limiting the class size of K-3 classes to 18. Most of the Valley K-2 classes are now in the mid-20s, some higher. And as we fight to maintain low class sizes in K-3, we watch the rest of our class sizes bloom. We want SB6 to succeed. Please consider appropriate funding for success, class sizes, and the ability of professional educators to differentiate based on student needs. And I appreciate your efforts on behalf of Alaska students. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane, for your testimony. Next, we have Sandy Ryan, followed by Judy Elledge.
Good morning, Senators. My name is Sandy Ryan. I'm a teacher of mathematics and computer science in Fairbanks, where I've been a public school teacher for 25 years. I currently serve as the Fairbanks Education Association president. I would like to first thank you for the hard work that you do and for your willingness to tackle the hard work that lies ahead. As a lifelong educator, I'm extremely excited about the possibility of the Alaska Reads Act, Senate Bill 6. I'm thrilled to see that our state acknowledges and recognizes the importance of reading, and in particular, the need for pre-K throughout our state. The importance of reading to learn cannot be overstated. As you serve on the Finance Committee, you have many difficult decisions to make in the upcoming weeks, and getting them right, as you know, is very critical. First and foremost in these decisions, I'm sure that you're considering the potential strain that additional unfunded mandates could place on school districts and communities across our great state. I know that our school district in Fairbanks has worked carefully and deliberately in deciding each year's cuts, trying to keep them far removed from our classrooms. There are simply no more positions, programs, or projects left to trim that will not directly impact students. The educational funding continues to decrease, or if an additional unmandated program is supported and we need to pay for it, then we will see class sizes impacted. There's simply no other choice. The prescriptive nature of the current bill is also a concern. Let the experts do what they do best. Programs do not teach kids. Teachers teach kids. Teaching is both an art and a science, with each young soul having unique needs, which experienced educators recognize and help them grow and succeed. Unless the legislature takes action, public education is already looking at a $30 million cut across the state. The one-time funding was a much-needed breath of fresh air after enduring 7 years of flat funding. Give us both the power and the tools to continue gaining ground with all of our students. As an educator, I want the Alaska Reads Act to be successful. We want every student in our great state to not just be a reader, but to love to read. I ask that you keep in mind that we have reached a point where we cannot do more with less one more time. I thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan, for your testimony. Next, we have Judy Elledge, followed by Mike Bronson.
Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Judy Elledge to testify on this bill, SB 6. Even though as an educator since 1981, I have lived and worked in rural Alaska since 1997. I've worked in the lowest performing schools in the state of Alaska since 2003. I've been a principal, a teacher, and all other district administrative duties. You will hear from many people today that represent special interests in education. They will tell you that we need more money. My question to you, has more money made our students more successful? This bill should require no additional funding. Nothing in this bill should be considered a non-funded mandate. It is something we should be doing. There are many reasons we're here today, and the problem falls equally on parents, districts, and local school boards who are not accountable for the money they receive. No, the blame does not belong on teachers alone, and passing laws will not make it happen without a total commitment from all stakeholders and the truth being told why our schools are failing many of our students. There are great and dedicated educators in the state, and I've worked with many of them. I will remind you that all five of the largest school districts support this bill, including the retention component. My understanding is that that is the section that raises the biggest concerns. Actually, the wording in SB 6 about retention is very similar to most policies in districts. The difference in this bill that it mandates schools and districts help a failing student. It is about accountability. I personally do not support retention unless we can be assured the child will get the support they need, and SB 6 does this. There is one, without this component, I do not believe there will be enough accountability to make this bill successful. I agree with the commissioner that I would like to see page 25, line 21, changed to 25%. When we looked at the numbers, we ran the numbers, it went from affecting perhaps 1,500 students to over almost 5,000 students. And so that is one thing that I would support to have it changed, is to raise that to 25%. I'm willing to answer any questions you might have. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Elledge, for your testimony. Next, we have Mr. Mike Bronson, followed by Bob Griffin.
Good morning, Senators. This is Mike Bronson in Anchorage, and I'm speaking for the Anchorage branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And first, I want to thank the senators, particularly Senator Stevens and Senator Giesel, for all the wonderful attention that they've given this effort over the last several months. It's been very impressive. Our main message to the Senate Finance Committee is that we are in general support of Senate Bill 6 for the reasons that it brings to bear two or three very important tactical approaches to improving reading scores on the part of our students. If we have a concern, it's that the fiscal note addresses the scale and the urgency of the concern and is not too little or too late in terms of the number of interventionists and that are provided to the schools by way of the bill and the number of preschools that are allocated around the state. So with that, I'm going to sign off and then stand by on mute in case there are requests from the committee for further information. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bronson, for your testimony. We have Mr. Bob Griffith up, followed by Jody Taylor.
Hello, this is Bob Griffith. I'm the Education Research Fellow for the Alaska Policy Forum. I'll start by saying that our kids are just as bright, our teachers are just as dedicated, and our parents love their kids just as much as parents anywhere else. We're currently only one of 14 states without a comprehensive reading policy. I take no joy in always being the bad news guys when it comes, but we need to have some perspective on why we need a comprehensive reading policy. Alaska ranked 51st in fourth grade NAEP scores behind every state in D.C. for both low-income and upper-middle-income kids in both 2017 and 2019. A 10-point difference in NAEP test score is roughly a one grade level difference in achievement. Our low-income kids were 18 points below the U.S. average and 10 points below Alabama, which was the second-to-last state in low-income fourth-grade reading. Our upper-middle-income kids were 12 points behind the U.S. average. Some have testified in the past that the poverty is the culprit for our disappointing test scores, but despite a recent recession, Alaska is still one of the lowest poverty rate states in the country. Mississippi, with a poverty rate that's 81% higher than Alaska, with a comprehensive reading bill very similar to what we're contemplating here in 2013, they rose from 44th in the United States to third in the United States in NAEP test scores for low-income fourth-grade reading. Some have also pointed to the fact that we have above-average growth in our NAEP test scores between fourth and eighth grade, but despite that above-average growth, we are still very near the bottom in eighth-grade reading. Between 2003 and 2019, low-income fourth-grade readers fell from 29th to 50th in their ranking, and in that same time frame, Florida went from 38th to 5th in the U.S. in low-income eighth-grade reading. With a law that the Alaska Reads Act is very much modeled after. Though there's at least 14 improvement strategies that are in this proposal, the retention element seems to get the most attention, even though it exempts students with disabilities, English language learners. We've heard testimony in Senate Education that
Mr.
indicates
Griffith,
that
can you please wrap up
it
your
should
testimony,
always be
please?
Socially promoted.
Please wrap up your testimony, please.
We've seen improvements in states that have retention models quite a bit more rapidly. My hope that the SB6 will be exceptionally effective with our kids. However, if we continue to remain far below the NAEP average, I would recommend a stronger retention element be considered in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Jody Taylor online, followed by Dr. Dina Bishop.
Hi, thank you very much for considering this bill. I really appreciate the look at early childhood reading and the concern for it. My interest in this was sparked when I helped facilitate a college prep testing course, and we reached out to many first-generation college students, and we really struggled to get them there. And what I found out, the reason, was you start losing children in third grade, and that turned me on to this issue. As a parent working on the advisory board for my children's public school, I feel like this gives parents a voice because for their students, because there's a method to hold the schools accountable. There's a lot of excuses and reasons that our children are not performing across the state in an essential function like reading, which should be a core mission of a school. And I really applaud the look at this that would allow parents and students the opportunity to say, the buck stops here. We have to teach these kids to read so that they can move forward and be successful in their life in whatever venue they choose to do that in. And I thank you for your look at that. I will also add, since a lot of people have spoken about retention, we held one of our daughters back. We have five children. and it was to her advantage to be held back and to be more prepared to go to the next level than it was for her to move forward and feel like she was failing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Taylor. We have Dr. Dina Bishop up, and then we have Mr. Jim Anderson next, and then after that, we're gonna jump around, I think, to Cordova. So thinking about the queue. Thank you very much. So Dr. Dina Bishop.
Senator Von Imhoff and Senator Stedman and members of the Senate Finance Committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. And I want to begin with an affirmation for the bill considered, sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 6. As a superintendent of the Anchorage School District, I want to communicate that Senator Begich and his co-signers reading bill, the Alaska Reads Act, aligns with our district's strategic plan to have 90% of third grade students reading on grade level. In addition, ASD's legislative agenda provides support to the statewide effort. Alaska depends on this legislation to empower our teachers to ensure students are readers and thinkers in today's global society. The evidence is clear that Alaska students are not performing as well as their peers in the nation in reading. Not only is our status on the exams evident of this, the fact that we are losing ground is also clear as we move further away from the mean in grade 4 to grade 8. Comments surrounding this bill have criticized the use of data to gauge success. Please know that whether or not we like national assessments, one question we must ask ourselves is why is there a difference between our students' abilities and the students from other states? I know our students and teachers are as smart and hardworking and caring as any other students and teachers in the nation. The delta between our achievement and other students in the United States should have all Alaskans demanding a change in how public schools are preparing our children to live in this information world. The science is clear on effective ways to teach students to read. It's inclusive of the five areas of reading grounded in brain research. You have proposed a bill to make a change in our state to guarantee all students receive the benefit of excellent evidence-informed instruction. Your courage to do this is highly respected. I've testified earlier in the year of the need of this legislation. Our commissioner has asked superintendents on multiple occasions to provide input. Please know I'm not interested in a consensus bill by which everyone can be happy with the outcome while picking apart the essential tenets that research has proven are good for students. I prefer a bill that will make positive changes. Improving the outcomes for Alaska's children is the primary reason public schools exist. I understand that Alaska has not been down the reading road before. Just like any new road, it's going to kick up a lot of dust and it'll often be bumpy. The dust often makes it difficult to see our destination, but continued forward momentum with heightened awareness of needs leads to a clearer vision. The dust around this bill will settle, and I'm confident that you have heard from stakeholders across the state who have provided feedback to allow DEED's administrative codes to guide us on the newly dusted trail. In Anchorage, too many of our students are not reading at expected levels. Our student learning data are not what our community expects. Please know I'm not shamed by what our data represent, rather I'm socially incentivized to improve our teaching and learning in the area of reading. Monitoring success is essential to our growth. We should inspect what we expect. In summary, I'm grateful for your fiscal support of preschool. I understand the need for assessment and reporting, and I accept the accountability in public education. A school system that allows continued feedback to parents as well as their involvement and action is essential to schools and classroom. Thank you again. This legislation must remain relevant and uphold and reflect the values and beliefs of a society. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 6 does just this as it provides for Alaska's children to leave our schools with the fundamental skill of reading. Literacy, rather literate citizenry, is paramount to a democratic society. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Bishop. I appreciate your testimony. I did serve on the school board under Jim Browder, 2012-2013, and in his short tenure, he did increase reading in elementary schools across the Anchorage School District by 90 minutes. I think he did that without extra funding. He just added that as a requirement, and I believe that the reading performance improved for Anchorage School District kids. But that was several years ago. I don't think he actually talked about retention at the time, and he was from Florida. Interesting to note. We are going to have Mr. Jim Anderson, followed by, give me a second here. I'm gonna go all the way to Cordova, and Mr. Peter Hoffner will be next. So we'll have Mr. Anderson up now, please. Mr. Anderson, are you out there?
Are you on mute? Okay, no Mr. Anderson. Mr. Peter Hoffner with Cordova, are you there?
Yes, I am. Are you able to hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony when you're ready.
Excellent. Thank you very much to the Senate Finance Committee. My name is Peter Hefner. I'm with the Cordova School Board in Cordova, Alaska. I applaud the work of Senator Bagich's work towards pre-K funding. School boards have been asking this for years. I do have concerns about SB 6, and we need funding just for education. The idea of funding pre-K at 0.5 FTE, we have a whole child, and we would have to have larger classes just to be able to fund a teacher for pre-K. The retention piece is bothersome, with so many exceptions and exemptions to retaining students. We know from a variety of metadata research that retention regresses students up to 2 years. The idea of grants and how's the capacity at different school districts to fill out these grants? let's see. What happens when this bill is not successful in increasing scores? As Mrs. Gilianis noted in Colorado, she stated, they don't consider any lack of significant progress a lack of success, but an opportunity to recommit and refocus their efforts, as this bill has been in effect for 6 years in Colorado. This is a very large and complex bill, and one practically needs a lawyer to address the many aspects of their bill. There are good and parts, bad parts to this legislation. I'm concerned that this Alaska Readings Act will be putting the cart before the horse. Is our lack of reading merely a symptom of a larger issue in students' lives? How is the data that we are seeing from students with increased ACEs? Are they having difficulties with reading? And does this bill help with addressing the baggage students bring with them so that they can even begin their learning process? Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony. I appreciate it. We are going to jump to the Fairbanks LAO. We have Ellis Ott, followed by Melanie Hathaway.
Okay, can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay. Hi, my name is Ellis Ott, PhD, and I'm representing the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. I've been a member of Alaska's Technical Advisory Committee to the Department of Education for about a decade. I appreciate the opportunity to provide comment on Senate Bill 6, the Alaska Reads Act. I have serious concerns about the third grade retention component of this bill, even if it's optional. Decades of research have clearly indicated the damage caused by retention. Evidence-based policy must make retention a very rare last resort. In Fairbanks, current school board policy requires extensive evidence in the decision of retention. Our third grade retention rate is currently only about 2 per 1,000 students. The implied retention rate recommended in this bill is 20%, and thus 100 times our district's current rate, 100 times. If followed statewide, Alaska could have the highest third grade retention rate of any other state in the nation. I recommend that the third grade retention component should be removed from this bill entirely. Fourth grade NAEP results, simply put, have been contaminated. States like Florida and Mississippi require third grade retention based on third grade state test performance. Thus, the students that take the fourth grade NAEP assessment the following year will automatically show higher performance. If a third grade teacher retained lower performing students to boost test scores for the fourth grade teacher in their building, there would be serious ramifications. Why are we treating this action differently for a state? Decisions should not be made with inaccurate data. Urban versus rural school districts. The five biggest school districts in Alaska, which contain 70% of students, all showed close to the national average for achievement. The remaining school districts showed much lower achievement results. Legislation should focus efforts to supporting school districts with substantially greater need, analogous to multi-tiered systems of support. Legislation should avoid being over-prescriptive, especially with districts like Fairbanks, which are already showing strong innovative, evidence-based practices. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ott, for your testimony. We have Melanie Hadaway, and then we're going to go all the way to Dillingham, and Nick Schulmeyer will be next. So, Melanie.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Melanie Hadaway. I'm the Executive Director of Teaching and Learning for the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. I have to admit that as an educator, it's a little odd to express concerns with a bill with a title like this, the Alaska Reads Act. While the intent is certainly admirable, I'm very concerned with some of the prescriptive nature of the sections of this bill. I'm especially concerned about the ability of small rural districts to meet these requirements of the legislation. I'm appreciative of the substitution of the word reading for literacy in this bill, and I'm very relieved to see the switch to evidence-based reading instruction. Both of these indicated an awareness of the complexity of reading instruction and the fact that reading is only one piece of a comprehensive balanced literacy program. I'm also in support of the identified support for schools and students in need as outlined in the statewide reading program section. Section 760, which directs the implementation of a statewide screener to be administered by the state. As a district test coordinator, I can assure you that the process of administering state assessments is labor and time intensive, even for a district as large as Fairbanks. I hope the cost impact on smaller districts will be considered. Additionally, a key component missing from this section is how proficiency will be reported to align with other assessment systems such as MAP and PEAKS. This could provide teachers with useful longitudinal data on student achievement. This could be easily remedied by adding a fifth consideration on page 15, section B, that would direct the department to report K-2 proficiency in a way consistent with the proficiency levels on MAX and PEAK, which is approximately 70% of Alaska students in their districts. I have considerable concerns with section 18 of the bill, the reading and intervention programs. While the intent is good, the prescriptive nature is very problematic. I urge you to consider amending the overly detailed and prescriptive requirements for intensive reading intervention services. This bill should provide big picture guidance as to the expectation of evidence-based interventions and essential components, including such specific language requirements as daily targeted instruction and small group reading instruction is too prescriptive. It takes teaching away from teachers and puts it into legislation. Another concern is the fallback on retention, or what the bill calls delayed grade level progression. It's not a reading intervention strategy. Decades of research on the effects of retention show that it's a tool that should be used carefully and under specific circumstances. I continue to hear that this isn't a retention bill, but the current language presents only limited exceptions and presumes retention. This approach ignores the realities of classroom and student needs that the teachers and school professionals deal with daily, as well as the long-term evidence of the negative outcomes for students have been retained. Citing models such as Florida and Mississippi, they misrepresents gains in student achievement as being correlated to retention. It's simply not an effective reading intervention.
Ms. Hadaway, can you
removing
please...
Removing the prescriptive requirements and making them generalized will make a positive difference. The sponsors should be applauded for making the importance of reading a priority.
Ms. Hadaway, can you summarize?
Educators in our state who know the needs of students.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And if folks feel like they haven't talked enough, you can also provide written testimony to this committee. Thank you. We're going to jump to Dillingham. Mr. Schulmeyer.
Good morning, Madam Chair Van Imhoff and members of the Senate Finance Committee. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Yes, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Nick Schulmeyer, and I'm the elementary principal in Dillingham, and I'd like to testify on SB 6. I'd first like to say thank you to the state legislature for recognizing the importance of reading at an early age. As I read, reread, and learn about how SB 6 is growing and changing, I'm very excited and encouraged. With that being said, I have a concern about one of the requirements currently in the bill. If I could call your attention to Section 18, roughly page 16, line 17. It says the school shall provide parents and guardians updates of student progress reports every 2 weeks. I feel this is very cumbersome for schools and for reading intervention teachers. At this time, I have 57 students who've scored below the 30th percentile on the nationally normed NWEA MAP test, which we had all our students take last month. As SB 6 is written right now, line 27, the school will send home a progress report every 2 weeks. For the sake of argument, let's say it takes 15 minutes to type up, print, and mail a progress report for each student. My current staff would spend over 14 hours every 2 weeks sending home progress reports. That's 14 hours they aren't spending with students, helping them fill holes and becoming better readers. I highly recommend that it be changed to quarterly or semi-annually progress reports, ensuring teachers can maximize their student content time. Thank you for your time, Madam Chair Van Imhoff and the Finance Committee members.
Thank you very much, Nick, for your testimony. We now just finished everybody who had signed up before 9 a.m. Now we're going to switch to the people that have signed up after 9 a.m. We're going to go back to the off-net and have listened to Posey Boggs, followed by Brad Galbraith. So, Ms. Boggs, you're up.
Hi. Thank you. This is Posey Boggs, and thank you, Co-Chair Von Imhoff and Stedman and committee members. Also, a thank you, a special one, to Senator Begich, Stevens, and Giesel for all their effort. I submitted a lot of testimony in writing, and so I just want to go at a high level. One of the things, I agree with Commissioner Johnson that we should increase the number of schools that are eligible for the three-year grant. However, my view is that to keep the integrity of an experimental design of the department reading program, I recommend that we add a couple of schools at each of the performance levels so that we don't give the perception that gains or lack of gains in reading performance in the lowest schools in the lowest district will be replicated in schools in districts with slightly higher performance. We can do this by adding only two schools in perhaps at the 25th performance level or even the 50th percent level. A lot of times when we add the evidence-based reading instruction, what we also see is kids in proficient levels go to advanced levels at higher rates. So I would make that recommendation. I'd also recommend that we need to align the Parents as Teachers program with evidence-based early reading instruction. And we would add the terminology that we find in the federal law about what reading is and what components are evidenced, which are phonological and phonemic awareness, oral language, letter knowledge, early handwriting development, print concepts, and vocabulary. Parents are very, very interested in what they can do beyond having a lot of books in the house. Having books in the house and being read to increases oral comprehension. It does not help pre-reading skills as much as educating parents. We also think
Ms. Boggs, can you please wrap up your testimony and let us know your main point? And we have several people on the list.
I think that we can save a lot of money if we take a better and more deep look at not duplicating screening efforts and asking DEED and school districts to partner via the federal child find mandate. I think there's a lot of potential there. Districts are already mandated to do this kind of screening, and there's no reason why a partnership can't be devised and in the end save a lot.
Thank you, Ms. Boggs, for your testimony. We appreciate it. Please submit your testimony if you have more. At finance.committee@akledge.gov. So thank you. We're going to move on to Mr. Brad Galbraith, followed by Tom Claymeyer.
Hi, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brad Galbraith. I'm with the Foundation for Excellence in Education in Action. And we wish to voice our support for Senate Bill 6 and thank the sponsor and all the stakeholders who've spent so much time working on this important issue. We recognize the extreme importance of reading by the third grade as a mechanism as a skill for success, not only through the rest of their education, but also moving on throughout the rest of their life as people who love reading and learning through reading. We've worked on on reading policies throughout the country, and through that process, we've identified 14 key principles that make a comprehensive policy, and we are encouraged by this legislation as it hits on almost every single one of those policies, those fundamental principles, and wish to encourage this committee to support Senate Bill 6. I also want to just emphasize that some of those fundamental principles focus on multiple strategies for helping children who are struggling to read to accomplish that skill and develop it more fully. Some of those being home reading strategies, which this bill covers, both in school and out of school opportunities to learn how to read. Retention being one of those key principles as a strategy in the context of so many other strategies. And I would encourage you to support this legislation for those reasons. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We have Tom Claymire up, followed by Stephanie Berglund.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Tom Claymire. This is my 24th year as a social studies teacher in the Anchorage School District. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of our 3,200 members in the Anchorage Education Association who have dedicated their lives to the teaching of reading and of student learning, and who are doing so in their classrooms as we speak. Thank you for hearing this bill, for your leadership, and for providing this forum for our community and state to engage in the discussion about how to best provide the high-quality public education all of Alaska students deserve. I especially appreciate the collaborative and bipartisan cooperation clearly evident in this process, modeled most especially by Commissioner Johnson and Senator Begich, who serve as examples for us all. There's no debate about the need to improve student reading. To be quite frank, however, this morning I'm having difficulty focusing on the finer aspects of this bill in light of dealing with the fallout from the passage of our district's budget for the next school year. It's tough to think about new demands while we're struggling to meet current requirements. There are certainly aspects of this bill which are promising. The potential that pre-K opportunities offer are particularly exciting for kids. But frankly, our members are worried that rather than empowering them to be better able to teach reading, it is somehow going to make their jobs more difficult. More difficult because of the burgeoning class sizes only getting larger. More difficult because our children, many of whom are coping with adverse childhood experiences, who will now experience significantly reduced health curriculum in ASD designed to help them become healthy adults. More difficult as teachers are uprooted from schools where they've built relationships with students and colleagues and involuntarily transferred elsewhere. More difficult as the responsibilities of the employees whose positions were cut are heaped upon the others who remain. More difficult as more and more of our quality educators leave the state or the profession altogether, discouraged and demoralized. Stephen Dykstra, who monitors state actions on reading as an advisor for the International Foundation for Effective Reading Instruction, was quoted in an Education Week article on the subject published just last week saying that passing a state law is just the first step. If you're not prepared to take on the rest of it, you're not going to get where you want to go. So I implore you, if the legislature wants to truly impact the efficacy of our public education system, we need to make sure that we're providing the support, training, and reduce class sizes, which allows students the one-on-one individualized attention they need to learn to read. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Claymire. We appreciate your testimony. We have Stephanie Berglund, followed by Donna McCary.
Thank you to the chair and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify. My name is Stephanie Berglund, and I'm the CEO of THREAD, Alaska's Child Care Resource and Referral Network. THREAD strongly supports expanding quality early childhood education services, including pre-kindergarten. In Alaska, our current pre-K services are working. Expanding this high-quality early childhood education through SB 6 will continue to promote school readiness and identify and provide support for Alaska's children who are most in need. THREAD anticipates that SB 6 will better maximize parental choice and early learning options. Access to high-quality early education programs is needed. Currently, THREAD estimates that there are only half of the needed spaces for quality early childhood programs than needed. By expanding pre-K, we support families with more choices by creating affordable and more accessible opportunities for children to learn in quality settings. We encourage the diversity of services, delivery of services be provided through collaborative mixed delivery systems, which will provide continuity of care for full day and full year services that working families want and need. To reap the full benefits of pre-K investments, we need to ensure the programs are high quality, including quality activities and standards linked to more positive outcomes for children. One element of quality is highly educated teachers, which the bill includes. We need to ensure the teacher workforce identified in the bill has a pipeline of educated and supported early educators. I'm glad there's a group working to look at the best recruitment and retention tactics for qualified teachers, because THRED anticipates that degreed early educators will find working in pre-K appealing and may result in fewer highly educated teachers in other early childhood education settings, such as childcare and Head Start. Quality early childhood education, including pre-K, needs to be part of Alaska's economic infrastructure as a means of creating a strong and prepared workforce. High-quality pre-K programs are amongst the most cost-effective interventions we can make with a long-term payoff. Thank you for continuing to invest in our youngest Alaskans.
Thank you, Ms. Berglund. Appreciate your testimony. We have Donna McCary, followed by Leanne Aper.
Hi, my name is Donna McCary. I'm a former school teacher in the Anchorage School District. I retired in 2011. Had two sons in the Anchorage School District. The first son I started in school at the appropriate time, although he had a July birthday. At the recommendation of the elementary school kindergarten teacher, she recommended that I hold him back. We elected not to do that. This resulted in the seventh grade with my son coming to me and saying, "Mom, I'm so tired of working so hard just to see everybody get up further ahead of me." We elected to retain him at that time. It worked out beautifully. He ended up graduating from high school with a 3.4 GPA. My second son, 12 years younger, had an August birthday. We elected to retain him and to not start him on time. He had equally important and success in the Anchorage School District. I don't think retention should be considered in all cases as a negative. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. McCary, for your testimony. We have Leanne Aper, and then we're going to go up to the Fairbanks LIO and have Christine Villano. Ms. Leanne Aper? Nope, okay. We're going to jump up to the Fairbanks LIO, Christine Villano.
Hello, my name is Christine Villano, and I am an Alaskan retired teacher who taught in our state in one way or the other for 45 years. I taught in rural Alaska in the Yupik Village of St. Mary's as a reading coordinator. I've taught in Fairbanks as an early primary teacher. My professional life has focused on the teaching of reading and writing. There are many components of the bill that I love. I love pre-K programs for all Alaskan kids. I love the focus on reading practices. I love connections with parents and early reading interventions. But as a finance committee, my concern is how will we adequately fund this bill so it's not just another unfunded mandate after the first couple of years? Will districts reprioritize how we're spending our money? What programs will be cut? Will it affect the BSA? I also see it in terms of how much time will it be? How many materials will we need? How low will the class sizes need to be? And how many personnel will we have to fund in order to keep the program going? Early primary teachers often face large class sizes, and as many have testified in writing and before committees, we'll be hard-pressed to do all the extra components that the bill would require due to the lack of time and the number of students. I'm encouraged by the state's interest in reading, but as many educators have told you, we are concerned about the prescriptive nature of the bill. Basic skills are important, and interventions are important, but they are only a part of a balanced reading program. I'm concerned with Section 14.3765 on page 15. There's many prescriptive elements of that that don't allow teachers to teach. The bill definitely needs continued teacher voice throughout the process, especially in the selection of supplemental materials, the assessment tools, the kind of professional development we get, the retention policies, and how the program will actually be implemented. I truly believe that people that have been in the trenches The classrooms of Alaska at the ground level have much to offer the legislature on reading instruction, progress monitoring, interventions, and assessments. Trust us, teachers need to be part of the process of how the legislation evolves and what it will look like in the future. Please know that one size does not fit all, and if educators don't have buy-in to the process, then it won't work.
Thank
Class
you.
Size matters, and I thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Ms. Villano, for your testimony. We're going to jump to the Dillingham LIO, and we have Denise Lysak. Can you hear us?
Yes, you can. Hey, thank you for Senate Bill 6. I see a lot of great possibilities in it. My name is Denise Lysak, and I have been a first-grade teacher in Dillingham, as well as a reading interventionist. And after I left the classroom, it didn't take me long to realize how much I missed the classroom and how important the classroom teacher is to every child. I have been involved in writing standards for No Child Left Behind. I've been involved with testifying for the Common Core. And now listening to this, it's like, how are any of these different? And it seems like we're always circling the wagon. We need to come back and why are scores low? First of all, is teacher retention in rural Alaska. We are constantly training new teachers. They come and then they go, and it just seems like we're always starting from ground zero again. So we need to look at why are we having trouble keeping and retaining teachers, especially in rural Alaska, and why aren't we growing more of our own teachers? The second thing that I'm always concerned about is class size. It seems like in this bill there's a lot of accountability and a lot of reporting to schools and parents. If we have small class sizes, we can have more communication. But when we have large class sizes, it's hard to constantly be communicating. And teacher improvement, we need to get all our teachers on the same page of what is a good reading program. And then that goes back to teacher retention. So this is a good start, and I really like this bill. But I also have one last concern is what happens to the kids in grade 4 to 12. We need to make sure that we're educating those kids now because they are going out into the real world real soon, and we cannot forget them and math and science. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I don't see anyone else signed up online. Nope. Anyone in the room? All right, public testimony is closed. Thank you, everyone who signed up. We do have a little bit of time. I would like to go through the fiscal notes. Could we have, is Heidi Teschner from the Department of Education Early Development here? Who would like to come forward and talk to us about, I believe there's five fiscal notes. Okay, be sure to let us know what the OMB component is so we can find it. Okay, thank you very much.
For the record, Heidi Teschner, Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education and Early Development. Before you are five fiscal notes, I am going to go through them for you. So I'm going to start with the foundation program. It's OMB component number 141. And this fiscal note does not show any costs, as this is the foundation program. The funding mechanism for this program is a general fund transfer from the public education fund and not into the foundation program. So fiscal note number 5 is actually where you'll see the actual costs related to the students that will flow into the foundation formula after they've gone through the three-year early education grant program. Once that program's approved by the state board, they will flow into the formula. So these fiscal notes assume that all the students that will, through the districts that apply, will flow into, those programs will be approved and those students will flow into the formula. So starting in fiscal year 24, it's a $1.7 million cost to the foundation formula.
question.
Senator Stedman has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Could we get a little bit more help on the formula? I know there's multiple columns of multiple equations and so on and so forth, and all kinds of mystical, magical mathematics to come out with the numbers. And could you give me a little bit of help on how this integrates within the formula? Is there just going to be a separate column where it takes this numeric of $4,685 by how many students it's applicable to, or how will we see the mechanics of it within that BSA formula?
So through the chair, Senator Stedman, the $4,685, we've come up with an average of what a student would cost in order to come up with an estimate of what the formula would be. The actual students, once they are, the districts submit their counts to the department, those would be through the October count, then we would put those into the formula and it would flow through. So we're estimating that it's a cost about $4,865 per student. Does that answer your question?
Just as a follow-up, just so I'm clear, so it goes through the multipliers?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, it flows through the multipliers, and then to come up with this average, the average of what? The schools that are challenged, all the schools, help me with the average. Where this 4685 came from, I know it's one half of what though?
So through the chair, we looked at the fiscal year 21 state entitlement projected amount of a little over $1.2 billion and divided that by the total projected average daily membership. So that's 128,923.91. So that arrives at $9,370 per student. So half of that is the $4,685.
I think if you look at fiscal note number 4, there's a chart in the back or a table in the back that sort of breaks it down a little bit farther because it 4 and 5 and 1 all are kind of talking about the same numbers. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes. They all flow together.
So just to go a little bit more comprehensive on these fiscal notes, to be clear, we got five of them. Okay, so if you go to fiscal note 4303028, under the analyses of the bill, we're essentially creating three new programs.
Through the chair, yes, the whole through all of these fiscal notes in the bill itself, there are three new programs.
Okay, so did I just hear that the fiscal notes on 2796 OMB component number 3028, 2912, and 2804. These all roll up into the total, or could you go a little deeper on these fiscal notes for me?
I think, can I just ask, do you have a total summary of all the fiscal notes and a table that shows the total totals?
Yes, ma'am, we do. So in fiscal year 21, if you add up all five fiscal notes, it's projected to be $6,347,700. By fiscal year 2026, for all five fiscal notes, it is $91,356,900 over that span of time.
Can you hand us
for fiscal year 21 through 26, and we can provide this to the committee for sure.
Thank you.
By year.
It's Madam Chair, the chart I have goes from fiscal year 21 through fiscal year 29 when we project that the three-year education grants would finally close, and then that's where the projection in front of me we can provide.
Thank you. So you briefly discussed, I think, number one, and I think you jumped to number five. So let's do number two and three, maybe?
Yep. So I did one and five because they correlate together. Mm-hmm. So the next one is the fiscal note for the student school achievement component. That is OMB component number 2796. And this fiscal note reflects the cost associated with the school improvement literacy program and the Comprehensive Reading Education Program. So I'll first go over the literacy program. And through this, DEED will provide direct support and intervention in district and school literacy programs during year one up to 10 low-performing school districts. So we've had a lot more conversation this morning about that number. Would be served directly by the reading specialist employed by DEED, and to 20 schools would be served during the second year and beyond is what we're projecting currently. So depending on the size, school size and the needs, so either one or two reading specialists would be assigned to each school. So we anticipate employing from 10 to 20 specialists in year one and 20 to 40 in the subsequent years. So reflected in the fiscal note is the salary and benefit costs for the staff. There are department chargeback costs of $9,600 per student and one-time costs of $5,000 per person for supplies and equipment, reflected in the fiscal notes. As well as in fiscal year 21, there's a one-time cost of $6,000 for legal services associated with regulation adoption. And then the final cost associated with the school improvement literacy program is the purchase of the supplemental reading textbooks and materials. And that that's a total cost of $255,000 for those materials. And then there's the comprehensive reading intervention program. And through this one, DEED will manage and operate the program and provide direct support and training for all K-3 teachers on the use of the statewide screening or assessment tool. The staff reflected in the fiscal note for this is four staff members, as well as the department chargebacks for those staffs, as well as one-time costs for supplies and equipment. These staff are required to participate and present at statewide professional development, so there's some travel costs associated of $1,000 per employee. And then there's funding of $320,000 for the comprehensive reading program's adoption of the statewide screening or assessment tool projected in here, as well as the final cost associated with that is a grant to school districts to attend the statewide professional development on the learning and how to use the screening and assessment tool. So the overall estimated cost for fiscal year 21, as reflected in this fiscal note, is the $4,221,700. And then there's a chart on the third page of your fiscal note that outlines each of those the two programs and the funding by line item in a combined total, so you can see the breakout.
Senator Bishop has a question.
Thank you. Could you just give me the reasoning why we're not including the geographic cost differential in this fiscal note? It's in the second paragraph under reading specialist.
Through the chair, we don't know exactly where the schools or where the staff will be located. So without knowing exactly which schools that they're going to be in, it's hard to estimate that in the fiscal note.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I was notified that committee members should have this chart, and this is the chart that I think you're referring to. So just show the totals. Okay, and what I can see here is probably around 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's going to be about a little shy of $25 million a year additional money going towards education. And with this being embedded in the formula, this is in essence a BSA increase. So we're kind of slowly moving ourselves up into a $25 million BSA increase on an annual basis each year. And that's going to be the base rate, because if any of these students identified are special population students, whether they be gifted or ELL or special needs, that goes through the formula multiplier, so it could be quite a bit bigger. So we have $25 million approximately of additional funding on an annual basis starting in year five and ramping up between now and then. So it's just something to consider, that this is going to be a commitment. This is not a short-term grant thing that we're going to do for a couple years. This is a commitment. This is a pivotal change into the state of Alaska on how we fund education and how we're doing business in reading. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yeah, just with the sensitivity of the formula, I think it might be a good idea for us to take a look at the formula in itself, either here at the committee or in our office, with this change so we can be very familiar with how it works. Because there are so many mystical calculations within it. Most people think they're mystical. They're pretty straightforward, frankly, when you understand the formula. But there's a lot of steps to it. And it is politically a very sensitive issue. So we could, however the chairman wants to do it here, the full committee or in our offices or whatever, but I'd like to see this in the formula and take a look at the changes and how it works. I'm comfortable with it.
So thank you, Senator Stedman. I think the question that I have is, we at this table model a lot of different scenarios, if you will, oftentimes oil and gas, permanent fund, you name it. Does the Commissioner of Education have the ability to model different student demographics within the education formula? So with these 3,000 students that go through on year five, if we modeled them as representative a demographic that we have now in whether they have a special population, how might that change this formula funding? So if there's a way to look at that, just so we have the big picture, so we know what we're getting ourselves, what the future may look like. Senator Stedman.
And with that, in the, it'd be nice to, when we do that, to take a look at a reduction in BSA, potentially, in the event that we ever have one, because we've never reduced it that I'm aware of. So we have the feeling for the sensitivity of that issue as we change the BSA in it, and the dollars flow through it, both, frankly, for that matter, both increase and decrease versus our projection here.
Well, one of the questions about this particular bill is that the funding is focused, and there are mechanisms in the bill with accountability, such as annual reporting requirements, both data as well as presenting to the different committees and so forth. This is, are we slowly moving the BSA to more focused spending? We heard a lot about class sizes. Is that something that we need to look at, and how will that affect the BSA if funding challenges for school districts if we change different components? I think it's something that maybe this committee can think about and then decide. We're going to set this bill aside, obviously, today, but I think as committee members mull over what you heard today, let's just talk with my office about what you might like to see in regards to this bill as we move forward. Are there any other questions? Do we have one more fiscal note to go over?
Technically two, Madam Chair.
Let's go over those.
So I'm going to move on to fiscal note number three. This is OMB component number 2912. This is for the early learning coordination. And the funds and costs associated in here are for the operations of the early education grant program, as well as providing training and support to the grantees. So there are estimated three staff members to operate and manage this program. Aside from their salary and benefits, is the department chargeback costs of $9,600 per person and the one-time cost of $5,000 per person for supplies and equipment. And since the state board will have to adopt regulations to establish the standards, there's a one-time cost of $6,000 for that in the fiscal note. So in fiscal year 2021, it's estimated to be $401,900. And the final fiscal note is the pre-kindergarten grants, the OMB component number 3028. And this fiscal note shows the costs associated with the early education program grants. And this is the table on page three of that fiscal note. Just provides the breakdown of it. So in table one, we've determined that, you know, there's approximately 10,000 students in a four-year-old cohort. And so trying to estimate the number of students we would like to see run through this, there's an additional 3,675 students that would be served by this legislation. And that's broken out in table two based on the when the six cohorts would flow through. So starting with the lowest 10%, then the second lowest 15%, the third lowest 15%,
then the third highest 20%, the second highest 20%, ending with the highest 20% to get all students through the program. And so then table three just kind of shows the committee and anybody else looking at this, which students and cohorts would flow through when doing the math to help you. And then table four just shows the amount of students that would be served that basically go back to your fiscal notes number one and five. So it's estimated that over the course of the three-year grant program, it would start in fiscal year 21 and go through fiscal year 29, and that would cost be about $51,652,125 is the total cost estimated currently for that grant program.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. So parents of teachers now is going to be inside this bill. Am I right? I'm getting a nod from the back. I just want to go back to fiscal note number three and make note of something for the co-chairs. Certainly your call, but the appropriation for parents and teachers is currently warehoused in HESS, and should we bring that over to education so we got all education funding in one area? Thank you. Just a comment.
I think Senator Wilson has a comment on that.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. I think the Parents and Teachers Program is also a federally, how we qualify for our FFSA, the Families First Services Initiative through Office of Children's Services is one of those programs how we qualify for funding for that. So I'm not sure if moving it will make a difference in that qualification, but something we should look into as well.
Are there any other questions from committee members for the fiscal notes? For the bill sponsor? Okay, we're going to set this bill aside for a short while. Thank you, Senator Begich, for being here and your staff today. Thank you, everyone, who listened in and testified. This concludes today's meeting. Our next meeting will be tomorrow at 9 a.m. We will be taking up the governor's amendments to the supplemental budget, and we are adjourned.